Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a prison.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I am your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on band.video, Rockfin, Odyssey, or the newest place, vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the amazing support. We know you've got a lot of options out there. If you like the show, you can consider subscribing, rating it, sharing it with your friends and family. It matters. The algorithms like it. We appreciate it too. If you are interested in connecting with me, the website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggression, where I periodically yell at bots, which is fun. Thanks to our sponsors. Solar Power Lifestyle has been a new one for us. They will take care of all of your solar needs. If you need just a little system or something much bigger for your house, they've got it. They've got everything that you need there. They have financing available. There's free shipping. They've got a price match guarantee, which means if you buy it from them and then over the next couple of weeks you find it cheaper somewhere else, they will match the price. That's usually a good sign. When you spend $100, they'll donate $10 to a charity of your choice. They want to give back. They're a small business. They're listeners of this show. They are veteran owned. It's a family business. You know, it's all those things that we really like. We want to support those small businesses that are going up against the big conglomerates. So look, whether you are driving across country with like van life, or you've got a cabin somewhere that needs electricity, or maybe just on the job site. Maybe you just want to make sure that you have a backup system in case things get really, really weird. And it is definitely possible. I would encourage you to take a look. Just go to solarpowerlifestyle.com. Use the promo code MACRO on your way out to save yourself some money. You can take a look. They've got everything. Jackery, EcoFlow. They've got the major systems that you would expect there. So take a look. See what you think. Use the promo code MACRO to save yourself a little bit of money on your way out. And also, chemical-free body. They've been with us for a while. You know how I know? Because none of my clothes fit me anymore. After Tim James put me on that toxin gut and detox toxin program that they ran me through for 90 days, man, I'll tell you what, it's really easy. I mean, considering some of the programs out there where you like have to, you know, juggle and work out 8 times a day and all that stuff, I'll tell you, it required me to drink a glass of water with Green 85 mixed in it and then take a handful of pills. That's it. I didn't feel sick or queasy or any of that stuff. I just incorporated that during the 90 days into my daily routine. And I was overwhelmed with the results to the point where people asked if I had AIDS because I was losing so much money or so much weight. Thank you for asking. You sick bastard. I was fine. I just lost a lot of weight. I mean, it just was like everything was more efficient in my body. It was cleaning me out. I appreciate that. I think if you're interested, go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro. And what you'll see is a landing page there. You just take a look for yourself. They put me through the program. I filmed a little video for it and to show my results, because it's hard to deny that my shorts didn't fit. And I obviously didn't go out and buy shorts that were too big for me. So it was the products. They work. They absolutely work. Chemicalfreebody.com. Promo code macro. Just save yourself a little bit of money. Let's be proactive. Can we please, for love of God, let's get our obviously we're trying to get our mind right. Let's try to get our physical body right too. Nothing worse than feeling bad, but it's preventable. So I'll tell you what. So to just make your health a priority and see, you know, See how things go. If you've been eating like garbage your entire life and not working out, and you think that vitamins are a scam, because most of them are, then have I got something for you? Okay, so just consider the program. Well, you know, I've talked a lot about terrorism. I've talked about terrorist organizations, operations. We talk about this stuff. It's kind of a cornerstone of the show. I mean, it's interesting and horrible and all those things, but there's a little bit more to the story of what terrorism is and isn't that we don't get. We certainly don't get on the nightly news. And I think a lot of people are kind of afraid to talk about it for fear of looking like somebody that is, you know, maybe a little bit unhinged or a little bit conspiratorial in their thinking, you know, to talk about these terrorism events as potentially being false flags, meaning, and to clarify, I want to make sure that I'm clear on what a false flag is and isn't. It doesn't mean that the event didn't happen. A false flag just means that the event did happen and it's pinned on somebody else to make it look like they did it instead of the person that actually did it. It's a simple concept, works really well. You know, if you do it right, it can be extremely effective. So that's why intelligence agencies and governments and militaries use them. They use these tactics because they're relatively simple. They are obviously devious, but they're very effective. They work really well. When you combine a false flag event with a compliant media, boy, it's tough to, you know, it's tough to go up against that, especially while it's happening. Like while it's in the process of developing, or something has just happened and it's breaking news, and you know, my little conspiratorial mind starts cranking up the minute I see any of these things. You know, I start looking for flaws in the story or whatever, just because I'm difficult like that. But also because so many times they're lying to you in the official story, and there will be flaws because these people aren't excellent at their job. They're just okay at it. So when the media tells you that this is how you're supposed to feel about an event, or this is who is, you know, Osama bin Laden was definitely involved, you know, did 9/11, and they're telling you that 25 minutes after 9/11 after the first plane has crashed, you're like, how do you know this? You know, why do you know this? This just seems, you know, it's okay if you don't know all the answers, but when you claim to have all the answers immediately, I'm very suspicious. So we look at these terrorist operations and we look at domestic terrorist operations as well. And I mean, according to the Biden administration, everybody's a domestic terrorist now. So that you can put that bumper sticker on your car. And I'll tell you what, if I wasn't on a watch list before this episode, I most certainly will be after this episode. So I want to talk about the real domestic terrorists. And of course, I'm talking about the FBI. The FBI, I've said this before, I'll say it now, and I'll say it in the future. The FBI is the largest domestic terrorist organization operating inside the United States. Nobody is even in the ballpark. They have got that title locked up. Okay. I'm going to explain to you just a couple of the issues that they've had over the years. And this is, again, not a full unpacking of all of the criminality of the FBI. I'm just going to hit some major topics. And they're big enough. It's not like they monkeyed with some whistleblower in some obscure company in some podunk town. No. This is, they're deeply involved with taking down buildings, okay, and blowing up people. It's really dangerous. And it's especially important that we understand this because the FBI has now opened up this classification system where they're going to start branding everybody as domestic terrorists. Joe Biden has talked about this biggest threat to America is, besides me shitting my pants with the Pope is white nationalists. Like, oh, that's the, listen, I fucking hope the biggest problem, I hope we get to a point where the biggest problem in America is white nationalism. Because if we get there, then most of the problems are solved. Because I'm as white as they come, and I can tell you right now, I've never been recruited. I've never been asked to join any white nationalists. I've got a shaved head. I'm a skinhead. Like, if you look at me, I have a shaved head. I'm prime. I don't like the government. I'm prime pickings. I'm frankly a little insulted. Nobody's tried to rope me into some white nationalist group, but they haven't. And you know why? Because they're not on every street corner. It's not like Starbucks. It's very rare. And the Ku Klux Klan is the fucking joke, right? They're like the laughing stock of America. You know, they're the, you know, they're buffoons, like, and comical. I mean, obviously the things that they're proposing are not good, but it's hard to take them seriously these days. Now, I'm not trying to say that back in like maybe the 50s, you know, maybe if you were a black guy in the South in the 50s, the Ku Klux Klan was very real and very, very, a very big problem. I'm not trying to dismiss that, but these days they've got bad PR, or they're not good on the internet or something, or maybe I'm in the wrong chat rooms. I don't know. But I just don't feel like white nationalism is the number one threat. But it is, according to the FBI, which is interesting because the FBI actually is the number one threat. Isn't that funny how they accuse others of the things that they are guilty of? And we're going to get into this. But 53% of Americans, according to a poll that some guy took, which means nothing really, but according to this poll that I read, 53% of Americans consider the FBI as Joe Biden's Gestapo. I would be in that group too if they polled me on it. So why is that? Is it just some? Is it conspiracy theory? You know, the conspiracy theory that UNESCO is so worried about. Is it conspiracy theory, or is there something to it? Well, if you look at how the Gestapo acted, and then you look at how the FBI has acted under Joe Biden, a case can be made. They are Joe Biden's Gestapo. But the FBI was built to be the Gestapo from early on. And it's been around a while, and it's been weaponized since the day it was born. And you should never trust anything that the FBI says about anything. Your default setting when the FBI comes out and tells you anything should be trust but verify. You know, like Reagan said, I don't know. I might say I trust you, but I'm going to need to verify. Actually, with the FBI, I would take it a step further. Don't even trust them at all. Just don't even like hear what they say, because it's important to hear what they want you to think or feel or believe. So listen to them, if only to understand where they're trying to manipulate you into going. But as you listen to them, just understand who they are at their core, what they have done to this country, and what they are capable of doing and what they're willing to do. And I will tell you right now, there is no line that the FBI won't cross, including murder, including mass murder of children. They will cross that line. You know how I know? Because they've done it multiple times. So let's start with the directors. And we can go back into like the early 1900s and some obscure people that you've never heard of that might have been in charge of this prohibition thing, see? You know, and like, I don't give a shit about those guys. I want to talk about J. Edgar Hoover. Let's start with that cross-dressing maniac that made files on everybody else. And he was keeping an eye on everybody and he was watching them, and everybody's a commie, you know, back then. Unlike now where they actually are. but back then when he was looking for imaginary communists everywhere, he had files on people, right? And he was like, oh shit, you get on J. Edgar Hoover's file, man, and they might just, you know, something bad might happen. Well, he understood the power of having a file on somebody, because the powerful people had a file on him. They knew he was a cross-dressing homosexual in the time, you know, during a time when that was not okay. He was a FBI director from 1924, which is kind of like, you know, but to 1972. So we are going back quite a ways, but really, like, when I think of J. Edgar Hoover, I think of it like in the 50s. I think of him in like that era. But he was the director of the FBI for 5 decades, and he was a horrible human being. I mean, just an atrocious person. So, kind of fitting, known pedo, cross-dressing homosexual. They all had the goods on him. And people were like, well, wait a second now. If you're the head of the FBI and you're going after the bad guys, how can you have a guy that's so compromised there? And it's like, I understand why you would ask that question, but just know this. The answer is not what you're expecting. The answer is he is in that position specifically because he is a flawed human being and compromised. I'm not trying to say that being a homosexual makes you flawed, or cross-dressing for that matter. I do say being a pedophile makes you flawed. And regardless of how I feel about homosexuality or cross-dressing or any of that, at the time when he was the director, this was like the equivalent of being a pedophile. In terms of, it would destroy your career. I'm not trying to say it like, you know, I mean, the damage that you do to kids by doing that is irreparable. Cross-dressing is, you know, a kink, I guess. I don't know. Not my thing. But the point is that he was projecting himself as being above that, above reproach, holier than thou, director of the FBI, serious guy looking for the bad guys, while simultaneously living a totally secret life. And the people that were in positions of power above him or in a different sort of area, they knew that. And you think they didn't use that? Of course they did. And so J. Edgar Hoover, while he is being manipulated for his kinks, he is simultaneously manipulating other people because of their kinks. So everybody's in on this thing, right? Nobody gets out. Nobody comes out of this unscathed. You don't become the director of the FBI because you have no skeletons in your closet. You become the director of the FBI specifically because your closet looks like a fucking graveyard. They have to have control of you because you're going to have control over other people. And that's how it works. So let's get a little bit more like modern day, right? Louis Free. Have you heard this guy's name before? He was the director from 1993 to 2001. He was involved in a lot of stuff. He mopped up Ruby Ridge and Waco. We're going to get to those. He botched the Olympic bombing component where they, you know, grabbed that poor bastard Richard Jewell and said, he did it, you know. He screwed up Chinagate, which was the Bill Clinton White House, where all the Chinese and Indonesians were in the White House, and he was selling secrets to them. He's a board member of MBMA Credit Card, which is a company that has heavily financed Joe Biden's career. He is a board member of Bristol-Myers Squibb, which I would have to go back a couple months and remind people that Bristol-Myers Squibb later became Wellcome Trust. So Louis Free, the former director of the FBI for almost a decade, is sitting on the board of Wellcome Trust, well, Bristol-Myers Squibb, which is essentially the same thing. So he's deep state to his core, for sure. And we will get into the components that he ran, specifically Ruby Ridge and Waco. And then we've got Robert Mueller. Robert Mueller is a deep state scumbag of the highest order, I will have you know. But if you didn't know anything about Robert Mueller and you just said, well, I'm curious, this start date for his career inside the as the director of the FBI, it seems, oh, I don't know, a little bit suspicious to me, given what we know about the events of 9/11. But I will have you know that Robert Mueller started as director of the FBI on September 4th, 2001, 1 week before 9/11. Now, I wonder why that was. Any guesses as to why Robert Mueller was installed as the 9/11 cover-up guy? Because he is on the team, and he can be trusted by them. Obviously not us, but he can be trusted to get the job done, which means, again, we may have some J. Edgar Hoover style cross-dress. I'm not saying Robert Mueller is cross-dressing. I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised if he was, or worse, right? Special counsel to investigate Trump. He was involved in the Uranium One deal under his watch to sell 20% of uranium to Russia. Gee, I wonder why Robert Mueller was in such a huge hurry to demonize Russia, to get them to demonize Trump and get Trump locked up, because Trump was going to blow the whistle on him being involved in Uranium One. Maybe. Maybe not. He at least could have. He knew Bob Mueller was involved in this with Hillary Clinton. And by the way, just Uranium One, a Canadian company run by Frank Giustra, who was deeply involved with the Clinton Foundation, where the Clinton Foundation brokered the deal to have, well, Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State brokered the deal for Uranium One to be sold to a Russian company. The Russian company was going to buy Uranium One. Uranium One was responsible for 20% of the United States' production of uranium. Of course, uranium is used in nuclear things like, you know, bombs. So under Hillary Clinton's sign off as the Secretary of State, she authorized the approval of this sale to a Russian company, you know, this group that was overseeing, you know, that was pulling 20% of all of our U.S. uranium was being pulled out by Uranium One. That company sold to Russia. Then $100+ million just magically wound up in the Clinton Foundation right after this as a, you know, as a bribe. I'll just say it, as a bribe. And Robert Mueller was in charge of this. This happened under his watch. So you just understand that there's connections there with that. And then we go to James Comey. And James Comey was the head from 2013 to 2017. Trump described him as, quote, an untruthful slime ball, which is, look, it's not, he's not wrong. But, you know, when it's coming from Trump, it's kind of like all the Spider-Mans pointing at each other in the meme. You know what I mean? James Comey, he simultaneously exonerated Hillary Clinton of her many crimes, but also admitted what a crook she was days before the 2016 election. He managed the Peter Strzok Russiagate operation, which was a disaster. So James Comey's a horrible guy. Again, James Comey, Robert Mueller, Louis Free, J. Edgar Hoover, these are all horrible people. These are not people you would want to be close with. They're psychos and in positions of power and constantly double-crossing each other. So the next FBI director after James Comey was Andrew McCabe. He only lasted for 3 months because he was in a huge war with James Comey. And then after that, Christopher Wray, 2017 to present. He's a scumbag lawyer. He's a W. Bush nominated. He was nominated by W. Bush to run counterterrorism for the Department of Justice. Great. You're going to be in charge of counterterrorism for the Department of Justice while W. Bush appoints you, while simultaneously his administration is creating terrorism with 9/11, with the Mossad. I mean, everything about this is dirty. Okay. FBI interview summary on Hillary Clinton. I have to read this. This is from my book, The Octopus of Global Control. This was from the FBI talking about Hillary Clinton. It says, there was a powerful group of very high-ranking state officials that some referred to as the Seventh Floor Group or the Shadow Government. This group met every Wednesday afternoon to discuss the FOIA process, Freedom of Information Act process, congressional records, and everything Clinton related to FOIA congressional inquiries. So this was an FBI interview summary about Hillary Clinton. Did they do anything about it? No. They just said, these people, they meet every Wednesday up on this like entire, like this empty office floor, you know, not occupied, I guess. And they are, all they do is manage which FOIA requests get approved and which ones don't. Anything connected to congressional records or anything, everything Clinton related. They just say, nope, yes, nope, nope, nope. And the FBI is writing about this. Fucking do something about it. If you know this is going on, do something about it. But you can't because you're the FBI. And so, you know, Hillary having classified documents, nothing. Trump might have something hidden in his safe at Mar-a-Lago. We got to kick the fucking doors down and do all this stuff. And again, I'm no Trump apologist. I think the guy's a lunatic. But again, the FBI is asshole. Okay, they most definitely are. Let's move on to some of the areas where we have seen false flag operations happen, or just straight, you know, fake events like the Boston bombing, and how the FBI is involved in it, because they're always involved. Their fingerprints are all over it, and in the case of Oklahoma City, their fingerprints are quite literally on it. But I'll get to that in a second. So let's talk about the Boston bombing. The FBI, remember, do you remember the Boston bombing? It was not a real thing. I cover it extensively in the Octopus book. I break it down in excruciating detail. The event did not, nobody died. Jeff Bauman didn't have his legs blown off. You didn't have to do Boston Strong. The Charnev brothers that weren't responsible for it. None of that stuff is real. Okay. All of that stuff was fake. They were patsies set up by the FBI and Kraft International. Okay. FBI asked for help. Remember, after they said, "Well, we gotta send in all these pictures." Anyone that was at the bombing or at the marathon, it took place after the Boston Marathon, like at the finish line of the Boston Marathon, right? So there were a lot of people there for this event. Anyone that saw anything, like if you saw something, if you saw something, say something. You know, like the Janet Napolitano, Department of Homeland Security / Fourth Reich conference. You know, if you see something, say something, like rat out your neighbors. But they said for the Boston bombing, if you saw anybody with a black backpack, if you saw anybody at all with a black backpack and you have pictures of it, please send it to us. The FBI said that. The next day they came out, they said, don't send us any more pictures. We're good. We got all of them. You're like, why? Is the investigation over? Well, sort of. See, all the pictures that they got sent to them were of white guys, military style guys, they were all private mercenary guys working for Kraft International. They had the Punisher hats, they had the Punisher logos, they were dressed the same, and they all had black backpacks. Well, all of them had black backpacks, except the one guy who was in the picture had a black backpack, and then was in another picture running away and didn't have a black backpack. And then they showed the black backpack that had exploded with this bomb in it, and it was exactly the same kind that he was wearing before. So the FBI is like, okay, you can stop with the pictures of the Sarnev brothers. We're good, because like all the pictures came back and they're like, that guy had a gray backpack. You know, the guy that you guys ran over or shot, or you know that guy has a gray backpack. You showed a picture of the bomb blast in a black backpack. It's a different black pack. If you, the FBI, have a problem distinguishing between a black backpack and a gray backpack, then you need to find another line of work. And we're not just gonna believe you, okay? This was a full blown false flag fake operation run by Kraft International. You know how we know that? Because there's about 8,000 pictures of the guys. Okay, so, but it gets worse than that. That was remember who ran that? That was Operation Urban Shield. And do you remember what Operation Urban Shield showed you? It showed you tanks rolling down the street. Well, APC, like heavy armored tank, with guys there with machine guns saying, everybody back in your house. That's a test run for martial law, if you ask me. Conducted under false pretenses of a bombing that didn't happen, looking for guys that didn't do it, when you knew the bombing didn't happen and you knew the guys who did do it. And yet you ran that operation in broad daylight, showing everybody Operation Urban Shield. But we all know it was fake. And we know you were lying about it, because we're not stupid and the evidence is fucking everywhere. I mean, for those that have never really examined the Boston bombing is one of the easiest to debunk as far as, you know, passed off as a terrorist event. There are flaws everywhere, and there's so much video. So, but there is one instance where there's no video. And, you know, I mentioned the two guys, the Sarnev brothers, right? But there's the third guy that you never heard. Well, you probably didn't hear much about. Ibrahim Todashev. He was connected to them. He was a guy that they just made up their mind that he was involved. I think he was a friend of the older brother. And so they grabbed him and they started the FBI grabbed him and started interrogating. Now, keep in mind, this event didn't happen. Nobody died at the Boston bombing. Nobody got their legs blown off at the Boston bombing. Okay. None of that stuff is real. It was a fucking staged crafted explosion that went straight up in the air. Watch the video again. Watch the video again. You'll see. It's fake. The whole thing's fake. You can watch people pouring out blood. I mean, it is as fake as a $3 bill. But the FBI treats it like it's real because they have to. So they grab this guy, Ibrahim Todashev, right? They interrogate him, not at a police station, not at FBI headquarters, in the guy's apartment where nobody's around except for these three FBI agents. Then one of the FBI agents tells the other guys, go outside and I'll be out in a minute. And then they hear gunshots. Bam, 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 bam. And they come in and Todashev is fucking dead. Shot 7 times, bullet in the back of his head by Aaron McFarlane. Shot him 7 times. Aaron McFarlane was the subject of 2 brutality lawsuits. He was the subject of 4 internal investigations. He was accused of falsifying police reports, lying under oath, violating the rights of a suspect, assault with a weapon, false imprisonment, never convicted of those because he's FBI. Shot in the back of the head. Said that Todashev came at him with a broom. Then he changed his story and said, no, he came at me with a pole. Then he said he came at me with a sword. Then he said he came at me with a knife. Which is it, dude? Pick your story. It can't be all 4 of those. So you shot, he came at you with a broom. So you shot him 7 times and once in the back of the head. Fuck out of here. But that's just, so you know, that is the FBI. The FBI also put out a story that they spoke with Jeff Bauman, you know, the guy without the legs, who is a crisis actor who had his legs blown at last name is Voight. He had his legs blown off in Afghanistan. It's documented. He didn't get his legs blown off at the Boston bomb. He's a crisis actor. He was brought there to play a role. He told the FBI, he said, the bomber looked me right in the eye. And the FBI is like, damn, none of that happened. None of that happened. Boston bombing was fake. But I'll tell you what was real and what did happen was 9/11. And I'll tell you that the FBI was deeply involved in that as well. I know. You're all very, very shocked. But what's interesting is that the FBI came out with regard to 9/11 and they made some announcements that really kind of contradicted the official story. In 2006, the FBI came out and said, there is no hard evidence linking Osama bin Laden to September 11th. Well, yes, of course, we know that. I'm just a little surprised. And of course, the FBI knows it too. I'm just surprised to hear it. I'm surprised they have actually said that. But what did they do on 9/11? While the nation was under attack, while, you know, there were threats everywhere. What was the first thing the FBI in Washington, D.C. did? They immediately confiscated 84 of the 85 Pentagon videos, camera footage. Why? To figure out, to solve the case and to figure out where, then how come none of that stuff has been released, right? Well, the FBI said that they wanted all material related to their investigation of 9/11 to be kept secret from the public. They specifically said that they wanted it kept secret. That is not, I understand some information doesn't get out to the public and everything, but when all of it about 9/11, the FBI's policy is that they want none of it released to the general public. Why? I thought you work for us. I thought you were supposed to be protecting us to get those bad guys over there. Those darn terrorists that are getting us. We're all on the same team. Share the information. Tell us what you found. No, they won't.
Why? Because it's because it will paint the terrorists in a negative light, right? It'll make us really hate them? No, of course not, because it will expose the operation. Now, if you're listening to this show, you obviously have heard the intro to this show, which I do get compliments on. And I agree. I like the intro to the show. It sort of sets the tone for the insanity that's going to come out of my mouth later. But the hijacker's passport was found blocks away from the crash site, if you can believe that. Do you know who found it? An FBI agent. It landed at his feet. A stroke of luck that is just amazing. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, of all the people in New York City, I don't know any FBI agents, at least I don't think so. But so I don't really know how many of them there are in New York City. But what are the chances that a passport flew out of a hijacker's pocket as he was being completely turned inside out by this explosion, right? The passport goes flying out of the airplane, out of his pocket first, out of the airplane, out of the fireball, through the debris, through three blocks of smoke and dust in chaos and all that stuff, flies down and magically lands at the foot of an FBI agent. And they expect you to believe that story because they think you're stupid. But it gets even worse than that story with regard to the terrorists and the FBI agents. I'm not sure if you guys are aware of this, but are you familiar with Muhammad Atta's magic suitcases? Oh, this is a treat. Strap in for this. So the first magic suitcase, admittedly, does not concern the FBI. I mean, it doesn't involve the FBI. Muhammad Atta, when he was living in Hamburg, Germany, right, plotting this devious, you know, how he was going to fly an airplane that he didn't know how to fly. When he was plotting this whole thing out, he was working on this stuff, right? And somebody broke into his apartment and stole his suitcase that had this information. A burglar. I mean, right? Only a burglar would break into some guy's apartment and steal a suitcase. But it was the most, sympathetic to the police burglar of all times. Because the burglar opened the suitcase, saw this information, thought it looked kind of important to the authorities, and then took Muhammad Atta's magic suitcase, number one, and gave it to the police in Hamburg, Germany. The burglar did. So they're prepping you. They want to make sure you're sufficiently mentally retarded enough to believe this story, okay? You have to be really dumb. So the Good Samaritan burglar who broke into Muhammad Atta's apartment in Hamburg, Germany and stole his suitcase, magic suitcase number one, was so disturbed with what he found there that he gave that suitcase to the police, you know, to help the police, as you do when you're a burglar. But it gets better because the second magic suitcase turned up at Boston Logan Airport. Interesting. He was coming. There was a transfer spot, right? I think they got in like Vermont or New Hampshire, one of those, but I forget. And they came through Logan, changed planes, and then that plane was the one that was going to fly into, I don't remember. Maybe it was the Pentagon. I don't know. But there was a problem. When US Airlines, the regional carrier that he was on with his magic suitcase number two, when he got to Logan, he got on the plane, allegedly, but his suitcase did not. I mean, frankly, it is the only part of the story that makes any sense, is that United lost his suitcase. Makes perfect sense if you think of that. That happens all the time. So his suitcase doesn't get on the plane with him. And then all this chaos ensues and they go, shit, we need to find out who those terrorists are. Well, they figure it out in like 4 minutes who the terrorists are, right? Because they start looking and they say, well, this guy's suitcase didn't get on the flight. And they say, well, where is it? Well, we've got it. Go, holy shit, you've got Muhammad Atta's suitcase. It didn't make it on the flight. They're like, no, there was a snag and it didn't get on the flight. Well, open it up, man. They'll call. Actually, no, don't open it up. Call the FBI first. Have the FBI come over. We need to have the FBI. So the FBI comes over And they say, we'll take this from here. We'll take it from here, right? They take the suitcase and they tell us what's in the suitcase. I mean, you'll never get to see, obviously, but they tell us what's in the suitcase. You open up the suitcase and there is a full list of all of the other 19 hijackers written out, all the names of all the people. The whole plan is written there. It's just, it's everything, including his last will and testament that is admittedly written in a way that is completely inconsistent with Muslim beliefs. But he wrote it anyway. I ask you this. Just go with me on this line of thinking. Tell me if I sound illogical. You're a terrorist, right? You're going to get on an airplane and fly that airplane into a building, killing yourself and everybody else and kickstarting the global war of terror, right? On terror, whatever. You write a last will and testament. Do you, before you get on that plane, do you leave that last will and testament someplace where people will find it? Like maybe at your apartment, or you mail it to the FBI, or you give it to a friend, or you post it online? Do you do that? Or do you take your handwritten last will and testament and put it in a suitcase and then check it onto the very plane that you're planning to fly into a exploding building? Who would read your last will and testament if you put it on the very plane that you were going to crash into a building? Nobody. That's because you wouldn't do it that way. So let me ask you, why did the FBI find his last will and testament in a bag that he tried to check onto the airplane, but it magically didn't get on there, along with a full confession letter of all of this, of all the people involved? Do you think that's a little bit suspicious and maybe illogical? The answer is, of course it is. It doesn't make any sense. That's the FBI. Best and brightest, you guys should start recruiting from better schools. You're getting a bunch of dummies. The story doesn't make any sense, and yet they're still selling it. What else was going on in 9/11? Well, the FBI were having war games in Monterey, California. Now, for those of you that are unfamiliar with the geography of America, Monterey, California is on the other side of the country from Washington, D.C. and New York City. It's about geographically about as far away as you can get without sending them to maybe Alaska or Hawaii, but it is on the coast. So you've sent all of your top anti-terrorism task force people from the FBI have been diverted to the West Coast, as far away from Washington, D.C. and New York as possible. Some bad luck right there, guys. But, you know, again, could be coincidence, could be, but you don't get the benefit of the doubt when you're the FBI and you're involved in all these things all the time. It, to me, what it looks like is that you were putting the people that might have been in charge of figuring out about this as far away from from being near the crash site. And look, I want to be crystal clear. I'm not saying that every single person that works in the FBI is a scumbag. The people at the top are scumbags for sure. But they tell everybody what the plan is. Are there good people in the FBI trying to do good things? Of course. Of course there are. I don't know the percentage of them. And I certainly would never trust anybody that was a high-ranking FBI official. But I think the bottom half is probably like the bottom half of Freemasons, right? They don't know what the fuck's going on. They're part of this group for whatever reason. They think they're doing good, or they think they're, you know, part of the solution or whatever. But they're not in the know. It's not until you rise up to positions of real power where you start to understand how it all works. And of course, the only people allowed to flow to those positions of power are people that would be okay with this new agenda that's going on. So when I say that they send the top, you know, the anti-terrorism task force to Monterey, California, they sent them there because there were probably some people in that group that would rightly want to figure out who was involved in this terrorist act. Some good guys inside the FBI, but doesn't matter. They sent them all as far away as they could get. And on top of that, though, I don't know if it would matter too much for the FBI, because I think they could make it happen. But there was a travel ban for days after that. Like, airplanes didn't fly and everything. They probably could have got these FBI guys back. I mean, the Bin Ladens were allowed to fly out, but you and me, we were stuck, right? So then we've got so 9/11. We can go back a little bit to the original 93 bombing, you know, the original 93 Trade Center bombing, because during that, FBI agents the FBI was targeting this guy. They wanted this guy to be a terrorist, right? So they were giving him bombs and they were giving him money and they were giving him the know-how to do all this stuff. But somewhere along the line, this is the 93 bombing. The one that didn't really, it killed six people, but it didn't take down the towers, obviously. Somewhere along the way, the FBI started to piss this guy off, right? So this guy started recording them, which he should have been doing all along, but he secretly was recording them. And on these recordings, you have the FBI, you know, telling him the bomb is going to be fake, but they switched it. So, you know, and they had wired this bomb making warehouse with cameras and everything. So they've got the guys on camera making the bombs, but these guys were told that the bombs were going to be fake, but the FBI switched it at the last minute. And anyway, so when I say that the FBI was involved in the World Trade Center towers, I mean both of them, both instances, 93 and 2001. And look, again, I don't want to go into a full takedown of the Las Vegas shooting, because that requires its own show. But let's not forget that the tone changed. It changed when Special Agent Rouse showed up on the scene. FBI Special Agent Rouse showed up on the scene. And then all of a sudden, Sheriff Joe Lombardo got real quiet about a lot of stuff, you know? And if you remember those press conferences, Rouse was right over his shoulder, sitting there watching him, just watching him. Not looking at the crowd, watching Lombardo when he was talking. And the FBI quickly took control of that situation, which is the reason why you don't hear about it anymore. That was a total FBI-involved operation, for sure. If for no other reason than the covering up of what actually happened. When I say FBI-involved, I mean FBI-involved in narrative management after the fact. Might have even been involved in the shooting itself, but I haven't seen any evidence to point that the FBI was involved in the shooting itself. But there's plenty of evidence to show that the FBI was involved in quieting things up real quick. And, you know, look, for what it's worth, a bunch of people that went public with what they saw turned up dead after that. So I'm just saying. And I can tell you, as somebody that lived in Vegas for 10 years and knows a lot of people in that town, I have heard from people that I know personally that said there were multiple shootings in multiple casinos that night. It's happening in Bellagio. There was a shooting in the Bellagio. There was a shooting in the Tropicana. There was a shooting in Mandalay Bay downstairs in the casino level. There was obviously the shooting upstairs in the from the room. There's a lot of fuckery going on with Las Vegas. And the FBI came in as the cover-up squad, which is what they always do. When you've got an event, and the FBI shows up on the scene, the first thing that goes through my mind is, well, they brought in the cover-up team, because that's what they do. As soon as the FBI, so the best, for those of us out there that have an interest in these events, like when they happen, we don't want them to happen, but when they happen, and you're fascinated about it, oh shit, there was like a crazy school shooting, or somebody shot a bunch of people in a mall or whatever. The first 24 hours, you'll get the best information. You'll just get all this information. Some of it will be nonsense, but you'll hear things in the first 24 hours that you won't hear after that. And what's happening is that as soon as the FBI gets involved, if they weren't involved in making it happen, they're definitely involved in managing the narrative and the flow of information from that point forward. So that's when you get the Rouses of the world come in, and then everything just either drops off or it takes a sharp turn towards Muslim extremists or whatever, you know, domestic. Now it'll be white nationalists, you know, whatever the narrative is, whatever the agenda, whatever the FBI needs to make you afraid of to justify their inflated budget, that's what they're going to do. So now it's domestic terrorism. So everybody's a domestic terrorist, and everybody who's white is also probably a white nationalist. So expect more shootings, and then you'll get good information and bad information all kind of mixed in the first 24 hours. And then after that, once the FBI shows up on the scene, expect the narrative to change to, well, you know, he was connected with white nationalist group. And as soon as you hear that, you go, okay, I see what's going on. I know what's happening. So anyway, this is from Robert David Steele, former CIA agent, who I don't trust CIA agents, and I don't trust former CIA agents. And Robert David Steele, who has passed away, did have me on his show, and he couldn't have been nicer to me. But he knows how I feel about CIA agents. I don't trust him. And he would probably have rightly told me you shouldn't. But this is what he said. Most terrorists are false flag terrorists or are created by our own security services. In the United States, every single terrorist incident we have had has been a false flag or has had an informant pushed on by the FBI. In fact, we now have citizens taking out restraining orders against FBI informants that are trying to incite terrorism. We've become a lunatic asylum. Yeah, he's right about that, for sure. Let's see. I can't talk about this one too much, but you know that school in Connecticut, trying to be mindful of the algorithms that search for words. The FBI report has now been redacted and is now classified. And I will have you know that while that was going on, actually, I shouldn't say while it was going on, but like a year or two. No, it must have been 2 years after the fact. I went on the FBI's database to take a look and see, because they keep track of murders. And I went back and took a look to see how many murders occurred in that city in Connecticut in 2012. And according to the FBI database, which I took a screenshot of, the answer is zero. Isn't that weird? I thought there were like 26 or so. I have a workaround, just so you guys know. I'm working on something that will allow me to be able to talk about the things I want to talk about. Stay tuned for that. Let's move on. Let's get to the Oklahoma. This is a big one. This is a big one for people. People are like, well, you know, you say this about the FBI, but are they really the bad guys? Well, let's talk about Oklahoma City. Okay. Let's talk about that. There's the official story. Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols drove a Ryder truck filled with ammonium nitrate, parked it next to the Murrow Federal Building, walked away, got into other cars, disappeared, set that Ryder truck bomb off, and it blew the side of the Murrow Federal Building to pieces. It killed 168 people, including 19 kids. It was horrible. I remember that day. It happened in 1995. I remember that day. I had just moved to the beach. I had graduated from college. I was like, damn, man, that was hardcore. You know, you see that on TV and you feel awful about it. You still feel awful. It actually happened. You know, the bombing happened. The deaths happened. The dead kids, that all happened. The problem is who did it. And, you know, it was a federal building with FBI agents in the building. That was weird. What was also weird was that they were all given the day off, which is kind of a coincidence, wouldn't you agree? None of them got killed. And there were also multiple bombs found in the building. Television news didn't talk about that. Well, they did the first day they talked about that, because you can still find clips of reporters saying, you know, we're here at the Murrow building and the investigators have now found another explosive inside. Now they found another explosive inside. So there were multiple explosives devices found inside the building. Let me ask you this. How did Timothy McVeigh get into the Murrow Federal Building in the FBI, a federal building? How did they get those bombs in there? I thought they just drove a truck up to the... How did they get those bombs? If there's bombs in there, and there were, then how'd they get them in there? Magic, I guess. I don't know. Timothy McVeigh is what is known as a sheep dipped, meaning he was in the military, then he left the military and said, I left the military. And they're like, you didn't really leave the military. We just told everybody you left the military. We sheep dipped you, and now we put you out. Now you look like a civilian, but you're actually doing some military type stuff. So Timothy McVeigh was involved in some things and might have even been, you know, might have even wanted to take down buildings like this. But the FBI was deeply involved in this operation. They conducted 28,000 interviews. They followed 43,000 leads. They collected 3 tons of evidence. They reviewed 3.1 million truck rental records. They searched 682,000 airline reservation records, and they still never could answer why there were additional bombs in the building. Why didn't you start by looking at everybody that had access to that building? I'm sure they did, and I'm sure they, you know, eliminated people. You know who was involved in the cover-up of Oklahoma City? This will come as a surprise to none of you that have been paying attention. Eric Holder. He was rewarded later by becoming U.S. Attorney General. You see how this works? So you've got to understand sort of the atmosphere in 1995 in America. It was one where they were really kind of pushing. Frankly, it's a little similar to where it is now. They were demonizing militia groups. You got to watch out for those militia groups, which kind of sounds a little bit like white nationalist domestic terrorist things. It's militia groups. It's a bunch of typically white guys, but not all. It's not, I don't know, they have to be. But like guys that are into guns and personal freedoms and don't tread on me and all this stuff. And they want people to leave them alone. Or maybe they've got themselves a ranch somewhere and they just don't want they don't want people involved in their business. I respect that. I don't want people involved in my business. And for the record, if they're not doing anything wrong, leave them alone. The fact that they don't want you around, you meaning they don't want the federal government around, is the reason why the federal government wants to be around. It's like, well, why don't you want us around? If you don't want us to be around, then you're obviously acting suspicious, and so we're going to investigate. Now, you have to understand that. So Oklahoma City comes after Ruby Ridge and Waco, and we're going to get to that. But this was the culmination of going after these goddamn militia groups, these domestic terrorists. And we're going to make an example of Timothy McVeigh and Nichols and everything. And they're not too far from me and Florence ADX serving life without parole for some shit that the FBI did. And the FBI provided the explosives to McVeigh. I mean, are we going to talk about that? Are we going to talk about the fact that the FBI provided the explosives to Timothy McVeigh? And they knew how much they had given him, and they knew how much he had used, which was not all of it. So they knew that there was a portion of unused explosives that was out there somewhere. And they started to get very nervous about that, because they knew that if someone found that those explosives, then they could tie it back to the FBI. So they went ballistic looking for the rest of this explosive. They said to Terry Nichols, we'll give you the fucking death penalty for what you've done. You're looking at the death penalty, but we'll give you life without parole if you tell us where the rest of the explosives are. You know? So they started an investigation into the missing, extra, unused explosives, because they knew how much of it was out there. So they finally found it. They didn't find it. A secondary police agency found it. And they're like, oh shit, look at all these explosives. And when they came in and did the forensics on the explosives, they found Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols' fingerprints on it. But do you know who else's fingerprints they found on it? When I said that they found the FBI's fingerprints on bombs, they quite literally did. They found agents that were FBI agents, their fingerprints on the bombs, on the explosives. The unused explosives. Please explain to me how that happens if the FBI is not involved in this op. Your guys' fingerprints are on the explosives that you gave to the guys that blew up the building, your building, blew up all those kids. Why aren't we dragging Louis Free down to Gitmo and waterboarding the shit out of him until he confesses to his role in Oklahoma City? I mean, you're the FBI director at the time, right? So, why? Why did they do this? Why would they blow up this building? Why would they do this? Well, politics. Bill Clinton was in the process of trying to get anti-terrorism legislation rammed through Congress, and he needed a little bit of help, you know, like a building magically exploding. And then anti-terrorism legislation just passes right on through. Isn't that funny? Isn't it weird the way that happens? Kind of like the Patriot Act in 9/11, right? When you've got some really unpopular legislation that is going to strip the public of their rights, freedoms, privacy, all kinds of things, and you know it's going to be deeply unpopular because it does all of those things, the only way you can get Congress to pass that and not face the wrath of their constituents when they go home, if they ever do leave Washington, D.C. and go home like they're supposed to, is that you create an event that is so terrible that they have no choice but to vote for it. And the public goes, well, we'll give you a pass on this one because that thing that happened was so terrible. So they blow up buildings. They love blowing up buildings. If it's not the 93 Trade Center bombing that the FBI was involved in, it's fucking Oklahoma City and the Murrow Building. I mentioned Ruby Ridge. Let's talk about Ruby Ridge. Ruby Ridge doesn't get a whole lot of play. It happened in 1992 in Ruby Ridge, Idaho, and it involved the Weaver family and others, but mostly the Weaver family. They were involved, or at least the people, they got set up on some weapons charge, some bullshit weapons deal. I think he tried to sell like a sawed-off shotgun to some guy who was like a undercover FBI agent, or maybe it was some dude who'd been put in a bind and was working for the feds. He'd flipped. I don't know. I don't remember the details of that. But it had to do with a sawed-off shotgun. Not a crime against humanity. But they turned it into one. They turned it into one when the FBI got involved, because that's what the FBI does. So they murdered Vicky Weaver, who was unarmed, his wife. A sniper shot her while she was holding their 10-month-old baby. I want you to just put yourself in a scenario where you are an FBI sniper. You are given shoot on sight orders. You see an unarmed woman, mother, holding her baby, and you shoot her in the head. How can you even consider yourself to be a human being after that? That's the FBI. That's who they are. Their sniper didn't hesitate. They also shot a 14-year-old, Sammy Weaver, in the back, killed him. That was actually a different guy. Let me rephrase. The first incident was between the U.S. Marshals, not the FBI. And during that, the U.S. Marshals shot Sammy Weaver, who's 14 years old, in the back as he was running away, cowards. And they shot his friend and they shot his dog, because the U.S. Marshals, much like police, immediately shoot dogs because they're cowards. So they did that. And then that got... And so the friend who was with Sammy Weaver shot back and shot one of the marshals and killed the marshals. Then they called in the FBI. Then the FBI was waiting for this, you know. So then the FBI covered it up through legal means, meaning the courts, and intimidation, as usual, which is what they always do. They went around, they tried to bribe the family, tried to offer them money. There were suspensions and promotions, like usual. One FBI agent went to prison, just one of them. They all should have. Larry Potts, who was number two at the time, he was promoted out of that position, but he was promoted to a different position. No, not taken out at sunrise and hanged. No, promoted. Because that's what you do when you do a good job at their operations. Operations that involve shooting unarmed women holding their children in the head with sniper rifles. You don't get fired for that. You get promoted when you work for the FBI. FBI chief Louis Freeh exonerated the FBI. What a fucking surprise. Then they paid the Weaver family $3.1 million. Oh, so if the FBI was not at fault, why are you paying $3.1 million? That's something you do when you're guilty. So you exonerate the FBI, say it wasn't their fault, and then pay out a settlement? That's weird. Kind of sounds like the Ammon Bundy situation in Nevada, doesn't it? In which the FBI was deeply involved in that. But again, I'm sure that's just a coincidence. We'll get to Waco in a second. I want to also, I mean, shit, since we're talking about like FBI involvement in fuckery, then can we talk about Hunter Biden's laptop? I mean, it's so obvious and such low hanging fruit. It's almost like can almost forget about it. You know, it's like, oh yeah, 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 yeah. They gave the computer repairman guy was like, hey, FBI, I've got this laptop from Hunter Biden. It's got all this like crazy shit on it. Do you want it? They're like, no. Okay. So he goes back to them again and says, no, I'm being serious here. I've come to you guys before, but I want to do this a second day. I really do have a laptop. I think you guys should see. It's got crazy shit on it. And they're like, no, we told you we're fine. So, that's the FBI. Okay. So we have that. We have, that's like when I started this off by saying it's not going to be like a full takedown of the FBI. I would need like a 10-part series to do a full takedown of the FBI, because I'm not even going to get into the Michigan governor, Whitmer kidnapping, not fraud, kidnapping plot that was filled with feds. Like everybody that was there was working for, you want to talk about the Spider-Man meme where them all pointing at each other. The Whitmer thing was like, informant, retarded guy. You know, it was like everybody involved in it was working for the feds and they're trying to set them up. And there was a paid informant that got exposed at trial. Dan, the paid informant, you know, he got $54,000 plus $6,000 for expenses, which who knows what expenses. What are expenses when you go to kidnap the governor? Do you get to write that off of your taxes? Oh, you know, man, that rope caught, it ain't cheap. That duct tape, keep the receipt on that one, buddy. So then we've got where do we even go with the FBI and Trump? Okay. I mean, I'll just throw these out there and we won't even examine them too much because it's its own show and it's a rabbit hole. But like the Trump Russia nonsense P tape with, oh, he's got Russian hookers pissing on him and everything. Sounds interesting. Certainly, you know, sounds salacious, but wasn't real. You've got the Trump Mar-a-Lago raid, which we just had recently. That was 53% of Americans think that Joe Biden's FBI is the Gestapo. I wonder why, Mar-a-Lago. You're just raiding your political opponent's houses? That's some like Cold War shit. And then, of course, we have January 6th, which is a complete and utter embarrassment for the FBI. So I don't even want to spend a lot of time on that because we those are fresh ones. And we know the FBI's involvement and all that and how questionable it's been. But I wanted to sort of go back into the files and pull out some old stuff that you might have forgotten about. Like Al Sharpton was an FBI informant. He was a rat for the FBI trying to bring down the mafia. If there's any members of the Italian mafia listening to this show, first of all, I like your style. I like your movies. I like your food, all that stuff. But if you're somebody trying to make your bones and you want to get retribution for somebody that was an FBI rat, let me remind you, Al Sharpton was an FBI rat. You can find him wherever you want to find him, right? You can find him on his TV show where he looks like a deflated balloon. Over at MSNBC. I don't even know if he still has a TV show there, but he's a clown of the highest order, but he was also a rat for the FBI. What about the Orlando Pulse shooter's father being a longtime FBI informant? What are the chances of that? Again, another guy radicalized to go in and start shooting people with some sort of agenda, and then you find out his dad has connections to the FBI. Very surprising, right? Wink, wink. What about Parkland? What about David Hogg? Oh, oops, probably shouldn't have said that word because now all the algorithm's going to look for me. David Hogg, graduate of Redondo Union High School in Redondo Beach, California, where I lived for a long, long time. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Did I say that? I meant he graduated from that other school in Florida. Totally wasn't installed midway through that year just to be part of this agenda or anything like that. But David Hogg's father, did you know what he did? I mean, you want to take a wild guess? Just a wild guess what David Hogg's father did for a living, who he worked for? The FBI. Yeah. You know where he works now? He works for a company called Cubic Simulation Systems, which makes software systems to analyze gunfights and combat training. Nothing is accidental. Okay? Nothing is accidental. But let's wrap it up with this. Let's wrap it up with this, with Waco. Waco is awful. And you can say what you want about David Koresh. You know, he appeared to be, you know, they had some sort of unusual religious beliefs. The media demonized them as running a cult. The media is dishonest, as we all know. So they may or may not have been running a cult. I'm certainly not going to believe that they were running a cult because the media told me they were. I might be willing to accept that because they all kind of, you know, kind of looked cultish. But regardless, whether they were or weren't, none of my business. You know, as long as they're not, as long as they're not keeping people there against their will, which they might have been doing. But I don't know. I don't know if there was any evidence of that. The government's insistence in sticking their nose into the Branch Davidians' business was the government's doing, not David Koresh's doing. But I'm not trying to litigate this thing about who was the good guys and the bad guys, and maybe he was up to no good. And they certainly did say that there was, they certainly did try to say that Koresh was sexually abusing kids. Ironic for the FBI, wouldn't you think? But there was never any evidence of that. Maybe he was. I'm not saying that he didn't do it. I'm just saying there wasn't evidence of it. So if that was happening, it wasn't so out in the open. But then again, if the FBI tells you that he's sexually assaulting kids, given their long history of being involved in sexual blackmail operations, like, you're not going to believe them. I wouldn't take their word for it, and I wouldn't take the media's word for it. They're pathological liars. So, but they called it a cult in order to marginalize the group, you know, because this was when they're going after militia groups. And if you call some group a cult, it's much easier to be dismissive of them. You know, like the people that wore the black Nike high tops and ate the pudding and went to the spaceship that was hiding behind the comet. You know, those people, that might be a cult though, but they were committed. I will give them that. Those people, they were committed to their Doe, their leader. But look, so what happened in Waco was, in 1993, there was a 51-day siege that was started by the ATF, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agency, which should be abolished, of course. But it was then taken over by the FBI. In the end, 76 people were killed. 12 kids under 5 years old were murdered by the FBI. In order, during this 51-day siege, just to kind of give you a little taste of what the FBI is willing to do, during this siege, they were using tactics. They were trying to keep, they were trying to pipe in noises into the compound so that they could sleep deprive the people. Sensory deprivation, including sleep deprivation. And the sounds they were pumping into keep the people awake were the sounds of rabbits being slaughtered. That was the FBI's idea. To pipe in the sound of rabbits being slaughtered 24/7 into Waco as a tactic to get the people to go insane, not be able to sleep, or throw their hands up and come out. Didn't work. You know what did work? The FBI was given tanks. They rolled in tanks, and with those tanks, they shot in what they described, FBI's words, not mine, massive amounts of CS gas into the building, even with kids in there. Now, this is gas, this is tear gas, but it's highly flammable. They then sent in, oh, by the way, quietly involved in this behind the scenes, who authorized the tanks to come in? Well, General Wesley Clark authorized the tanks to come in. And he was quietly involved, but he was promoted after this and was soon in charge of NATO in Kosovo. And that he is of the 7 countries in 5 years guy, the guy that gave away the game after 9/11. know, I got this memo down from upstairs. It says how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years. You know, when you go, oh, that guy, that's the guy that authorized the tanks at Waco. So before we say thank you to General Wesley Clark for giving up the information, we should probably try him for his crimes against humanity. So after the tanks rolled in and fired in the tear gas into the buildings, the compounds that was filled with kids, they then shot incendiary devices into the compound and the whole place went up like a Roman candle. When the fire department arrived on the scene to put the fire out, the FBI turned them away. I'm going to end on that because I want you to understand who the FBI is. So when I say flippantly, the FBI is the largest domestic terrorist organization operating in America, I'm not kidding. And I'm not just pulling that out of my ass. There is overwhelming evidence to back that up. I wish it weren't true. I wish they were the good guys, but that's really just not the case. If you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. The website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can find me on Twitter @macroaggressions. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you soon.